if anyone's written any questions, why don't you go ahead and pass them towards the center aisle, and Mercedes will collect them. While we're on hot topic social issues, let's address lesbian and gay rights. I want to address two questions and join them. First question is, about 18 years ago, Alaska passed an amendment to the Alaska Constitution that defined marriage as marriage can only be between a man and a woman. It's an amendment that appears to violate the U.S. Constitution. Secondly, we also have discussions about legislation that would give non-discrimination protection based upon sexual orientation. So may I ask you that what would your vote be if those issues were to come up before you? One, repealing the amendment to allow marriage to be between same sex, and two, also providing sexual orientation as a special ground to protect against discrimination. Ms. Wyeth?
I do believe that marriage is defined as a union between one man and one woman. I would not vote in opposition of that remaining the law. I do believe that all persons have the right to be treated equally and respectfully, regardless of anything. But I do not believe that we should have to create laws that cause people to follow those rules. I would not be in support of regulations regarding gay, lesbian, transgender equality as a law. I think that that's just, humans need to treat humans like humans.
On the part of the repeal, I doubt that that will come up, but I would, before repealing it, I mean, I don't think that we need parts of our Constitution or our laws in violation of the U.S. Constitution. We do get into those a number of times. We get bills. We have bills that come before the legislature that are clearly unconstitutional. There was one this last year that was clearly violated the state constitution. And people will pass it for religious reasons or for other reasons. I believe the church and separation of church and state should be there. And when people are passing bills based on their religious philosophy, that is the wrong place to be inserting it in state government. Non-discrimination is very important. The idea that we don't need laws to enforce behavior, I mean, that's what the state legislature does, is pass laws to, whether it's driving laws, whatever those laws are, they're there because people aren't doing what you would theoretically say, oh, people should all get along and be proper together, and there's no violence or there's no murders or there's no anything. We shouldn't need any of those laws. That's not correct. We need to make sure that the values of our society are upheld, and the way we do that is the legislature passes laws to make sure that everyone knows what is acceptable and what is not.
Wow. Marriage between a man and a woman, that is a religious issue, right? When you go to church, it's God's will that a man marries a woman, right? The gay-lesbian issue, that is, they're fighting for the same rights, i.e. tax credits, from the government. If a gay wants to marry another male or whatever, excuse me, I don't mean that, get a contract so you get the same legal protection as a married couple. Okay, but through the church, through my church, I'm Catholic, marriage is between a man and a woman, cut and dry. As far as the passing legislation for sexual orientation, we have enough laws on the books. You're a human being. I'm going to treat you like a human being. We don't need to have a law that says because your sexual orientation, you should have special privileges or protected. It's simple. We're making we're making a mountain out of an anthill. You know, as far as this issue with the transgender bathrooms in the schools and stuff, come on. We're talking less than one or one third of 1% of the nation. Excuse me. Identifies with this transgender issue. So we don't need any more laws.
Okay, then just let's touch on another side of that. In some states, there is legislation that gives right to those who claim a religious objection to providing services for gays or lesbians. If that were to come up before you for a vote, how would you vote?
Well, just want to make sure everybody understands it's difficult when you say, here's a law, and there's going to be all these details in that bill, and we're talking about, oh, here's an idea of a law, and the idea of a law can be very different than the particulars that are encased in that 10 or 12 pages. So just talking philosophically about whether there should be gender equality, was that the question again?
No, I'm asking the question which has been submitted to me was that for those who would object to providing services to a lesbian or gay couple, would you support such a legislation?
No, I think that what we would be doing there is exactly the thing of saying we are going to allow discrimination based on that characteristic. It doesn't matter whether it's a color characteristic or an ethnic characteristic or some other personal characteristic that is there. It's just like being able to fire somebody because of those reasons that don't affect the job. And so I would not be supportive of passing such a law.
Thank you.
Wow. If a person were to come up to us with a good example, the bakers, was it in Colorado? If their Christian beliefs dictate that it made them feel uncomfortable, they should have the right to refuse services. There are other bakers around town that'll do the job. So to force someone to do something against their religious beliefs, I believe is wrong. Really wrong.
I think that it's always an intriguing question when you get into these issues. As an individual, if you operate a business, and the legal definition is if you conduct a business that is dependent on your personal artistic contribution to the item, and the baker is a perfect example, the florist is another example, and you are the person that can make this happen in the way that the couple would like it to happen. You legally, how can government force you to provide that service? This is like saying, I'm going to force Ed Tussey to paint me a painting, whether he wants to or not. You can't do that. That is his personal contribution to the world, and the government doesn't have the right to demand that he provide you that service. Now, if you're a business owner and you run a grocery store, general public access, a drugstore, something that's general public access, and everybody comes in and goes out, they have to be providing the same service to all people. There should be no discrimination in that place. But when it's my personal artistic value that creates the organization and the company that I'm providing service to you from, I get to follow my own values. I don't have to cede my values to the fact that yours don't align with mine, and I don't think government has the right to tell me that I do.
Okay, thank you. The single most popular question of the evening.
So far.
As Republicans, do you support the GOP candidate for president? I tell you, half of you asked that question.
Is it you start?
Yeah, I'll start. It's just a yes or no?
Yes or no, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
As a Republican, I am disappointed with our selection.
Is that a yes or no?
I have to stay with undecided. I'm waiting to see if his vice president would be able to carry him But if he can't learn to shut his mouth and quit being offensive to the world around him, we don't need him to be our president. But we don't need Hillary to be our president either. That would be just as bad or worse.
Yes or no? I'm going to be watching debates and watching the performance as it develops. This is a very interesting thing where we say Republican, and then you say, well, Republican, does that mean Cruz, or does that mean Trump, or does that mean Kasich, or what is this definition? Some people have this definition, so I am not.
Certainly, you've decided at this point. By now, you've made up your mind one way or the other.
I have not watched the debates, and I'm going to be watching that because, I have a real problem with the other candidate as well. Other major candidate, because I think that. I have seen no one that is more fast to pull the trigger on another war than that candidate as well. So I'm going to be watching closely.
Okay, fair enough.
So was that a yes?
I'm going to be watching.
Okay, so let's see. Who's got the mic first on this one? We all know that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is our right. Does this include health care for low-income folks?
I don't know that health care is a pursuit of happiness issue. Health care is a societal issue. There are aspects of health care that actually hinder or improve your pursuit of happiness. I think that we have a huge issue with health care in this country. I don't believe we've taken the right path to resolving that issue. I think the issue is bigger in Alaska than it is in the lower 48. I also don't believe we've taken the right path to that either. We have accepted through the direction of the governor that we are going to do Medicare reform and accept those funds, but I don't know how many people have been watching that. Accepting that support has a guaranteed fiscal cliff for us that we have no way to fill our current $4.1 million or billion-dollar gap. How are we going to fill the gap that's created by that? So we have yet again put into place an action that has no escape route, that has no form of plan for how we're going to maintain it into the future. So whether it's a guaranteed right or not, I don't believe constitutionally we're required to prepare and provide medical services, but it is certainly having medical insurance does help because the cost of it of medical care is so high.
Well, first of all, we are required. Anybody goes to the hospital can't kick them out. They must treat them, must stabilize them, must give them that care. So there is a requirement for care. It's inappropriate care. It should be primary care. I've been in the legislature, and we had the bill. I'm Health and Social Services. We worked for weeks on Medicaid expansion, getting the parameters down, making sure that if the government changed and went below the 90% reimbursement, the plan effectively and adamantly stopped. We have a population of working poor that can hardly get a job because they have poor health, and who wants to hire somebody when they come in and all of a sudden you're going to have this huge health load on your as an employer. So the bill never came to either the House or the Senate floor because the leadership knew that there were bipartisan votes to pass that on both the House and the Senate floor. And so it never could come to a vote because there were people that were in there that had a philosophical objection to the President of the United States. Federal paid health care, 100%. Was going to be paid for 3 years, and then it ratcheted down to 90%. Under current Medicaid, Denali Kid Care for pregnant women and kids, we get 50% reimbursement rate. This was guaranteed never to go below 90%, and it also was 100% for new enrollees, such as those that are in our prisons when they get out and have to go for treatment. So we would actually have saved all money, and we are saving money. So the fiscal cliff idea is just not factual.
In relationship to the Constitution, no. There is no, I don't believe there's anywhere that says that we're required to provide medical health to individuals. Listen, I understand that we need to reform our medical system. We really do. It's gotten too expensive, and people can't afford it. But to force me to pay more money to pay for somebody else, I can't. I can't afford it. I'm barely making ends meet. As a business owner, if I'm required to pay more money in taxes, guess what? I'm going to have to let go people. Then they're going to be on their own. Okay. What is medicine? Medicine is a business, just like education. It is a business, right? If to get medical costs down, if you had 15 doctors over here, and I'm not picking on the doctors, you had 15 doctors here and they're all orthopedic surgeons, and you got a broken arm, and you go to this one, he's charging you $6,000, that one's charging you $2,000, $100. They all went to the same college, they all graduated at the top of their class. Who are you going to go to? The person that's going to charge you the less, right? So what happens is it brings the cost of medicine down so that people can't afford it.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to follow up on something that Mr. Seaton talked about, which is caucus voting. I'm going to preface it by one note here before I moved into the question. I vote for the individual, not the party, so block voting is abhorrent. It does not make room for rethinking or responding to individual constituents. So let's talk about a little bit about the process that the legislature has about its caucus voting. We know that it's illegal for our government to have closed meetings. How in good conscience can the state legislature adopt a closed caucus policy that eliminates individual dissent? We'll start off with that.
I've been asked this question once before. Would I join a caucus if I got down to Juneau? My answer is no. If you elect me as your representative, you're expecting me to represent you in your vote. Not go to let a caucus, somebody that's behind closed doors, like we just talked about, and then make the decisions for you. Why even have a representative go down there if they're going to allow a caucus to make the decision for your district?
Very good.
Caucus discussion, having watched the floor, the House and the Senate floor in Juneau, they are in session, they go into caucus, they're still on the floor, you can see them, you can see that they're talking to people, you cannot hear a word they're saying. It is not an open meeting. They enforce open meetings on local communities, and I will tell you, I don't ever talk about, or I shouldn't say never, but very seldom talk to members of the council outside of the council meeting, because if I'm talking to you, I want you to hear what I have to say. With regards to partisan participation in making decisions, I am running as a Republican for a very specific reason. I support the platform of the Republican Party. I support a very conservative representation of government. And to me, the party platform is intended to help you, as voters, have a sense of how we're going to behave when we get to Juneau. If we go to Juneau and we do not behave consistent with the party platform that you elected us to, then, and you can go on the floor and you can have these conversations and you don't ever know what we talked about, then it becomes very difficult to be sure for you as a voter that you are being represented. We don't ever have a 100% vote. 100% of people never vote for one person. So there is some differentiation in the representation that is expected from the people that vote for you or from the people that vote against you. Still, you want to represent all of them. You need to understand both sides of that. But when I am in Juneau, I will be representing from the Republican platform perspective. And whether that's considered an open or closed caucus, if I'm in conflict, I have an opportunity to help them understand my perspective before it goes to a vote. If I'm not successful in doing that, then I will vote the appropriate with my party.
Caucuses in Juneau is what we're really talking about, and they are not partisan. They're not fully partisan. Both the House has always, for the last 6 years, has had four Democrats in the majority Republican caucus. The caucus in the Senate, the majority caucus, has both Democrats and Republicans in it. The minority caucus in the House has independent and Democrat members. So the idea that there is one platform that controls everything is not correct. The ethics law that was passed means that you cannot go into a caucus and talk about the bills, vote on bills, vote how you're going to decide. You can't come out of there and go, everybody's got to toe the party line and support the caucus decision, because a decision can't be made in caucus legally. So people don't understand that. I understand there's abhorrence, but what you're talking about in a caucus is a majority and a minority of the bodies, that the majority, whichever that is and however that grouping goes, is going to select the committee chairman, are going to work on an agenda, a broad agenda, political agenda, strategic agenda for that body, and is going to move forward that way. There is, within the majority caucus, there's two things that you have to do. You have to vote on the final budget after you've wrestled it out through all the subcommittees and everything, and you have to vote to uphold the speaker in the control of legislation on the floor. And that's the only two things. And so you will see in the voting records of everybody that almost all people are not following a party line. They are voting for their constituents, and I do that as well. I don't vote necessarily with the party if it's in opposition to the interests of my district.
You are listening to the Friends of the Homer Public Library District 31 Candidate Forum here on KBBI AM 890 Homer. The forum was recorded on Friday, August 6th.
We got so many questions on the budget. We're going to go move into it in just a moment. Before we do that, let me ask, other than the budget, what do you feel is the largest single issue that will be considered by the 2017 legislature?
I think the budget will again be their focal point if they don't ever get past this. For me, going down and looking at what we need to do to resolve the budget issue, it's a two-pronged thing.
Other than the budget.
Other than the budget issue. I think we have to talk about the economy. We have to talk about ways to become less dependent on oil and gas. If we do not figure out that thing, then we don't have the ability to create a sustainable budget.
Other than the budget, because the budget is what you are, the monies you're appropriating to fund either capital or your operating budgets for the year, is the fiscal plan. That's going to be the key element that has to be done. How are we going to get a sustainable plan that generates revenues so that you have something to pay and do your budget? This year we had a budget fully paid, but 3/4 of it was out of our savings account. We only had 30% of the revenue to pay for the budget. So there needs to be a fiscal plan that decides how are we going to generate the revenues that we need for the services that the people of Alaska want. So it's a separate issue from the budget, but it's actually more important than the budget because it determines what kind of revenue sources we will use and how we get there.
That's an easy one. Everybody's heard about the three-legged stool: oil, tourism, fishing industry. We need to bring jobs here to Alaska, cut and dry. And we cannot tax businesses to the point where they don't want to come here. We have to make it so that they look at Alaska as a place to flourish. Let me give you an example. Right now, the governor is looking at taxing the aviation fuel on top of what we're already paying. Right now, the industries like UPS, FedEx, that fly into Anchorage, the aviation industry, the highest part of their budget is their fuel. So these huge cargo planes that fly into Anchorage, if they're going to have to pay more money for fuel, the stop in Anchorage is just a hub. They don't have to stop there. It's a convenient thing for them. They'll just bypass Alaska altogether and go down to the lower 48. So those are the things we need to focus on and stop penalizing businesses throughout the state.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the budget.
Oh, right here.
Please.
Start with you, Mr. Siegel.
Yep.
If you favor further reductions in state spending, would you please identify the specific reductions that you would urge, identifying the department, agency, and the amount? What fat would you cut?
Well, of course, the biggest, you know, we can't nickel and dime things and spend all our time looking at tiny cuts. We need to look at big chunks. And the big chunk is oil and gas tax credits. That's the biggest expenditure when you consider both the cashable tax credits and those that are deducted from the taxes that oil companies would pay. That is the largest expenditure in the entire state of Alaska. Larger than the university, larger than healthcare, and larger than K-12 education. Now, if you just talk about the cashable tax credits, it's $750 million a year, approximately, a big chunk, you know, when you're only talking about $1.2 billion for the entire K-12 budget. So we need to start there. And that's what I did working with members of both majority and the minority in the House. We revised tax credits drastically in Cook Inlet. Remember, in Cook Inlet, there's no production tax paid on oil, and yet they were getting, in 2015, $404 million. $404 million is $404,000 per job on the Kenai Peninsula in the oil and gas industry. Now, that's pretty ridiculous to be saying that we're going to be paying three times the entire wage base of the oil and gas industry on the Kenai Peninsula. And so we got rid of that. We also had the bigger problem, which is on the North Slope, in the bill that we passed out of the House. However, the Senate reduced that and pulled almost everything off of the North Slope. So we've got to go back and face that because we are looking at hundreds of millions of dollars there. And so that is the biggest place and quickest place where we need to revise our budget to reflect reality.
What we said earlier, I agree with Paul, the oil tax industries, right? I stated that earlier. But there are other areas that we can cut down on. Let's, for example, the Department of Education, all right? Now, I'm not talking about taking money away from the teachers. I'm talking about doing away with all the school boards. Why do we have to have so many boards throughout the state, right? They're all doing the same job. Let me give you another example. The state of Alaska spends $16,000 per person, right, as a government. Lower 48, they spend $4,000. Something's wrong there. Another example of why we have to cut the fat from Juneau. And like Paul said, it's small potatoes, but it's a start. We've got 10 individuals, I can tell you right now, 10. They make $100,000 a year. $100,000 a year. Everybody's important, but I'm not saying that they're like some kind of brain surgeon. They're somebody that's been working their way up through the system. And based on longevity, they get their automatic pay raises. 10 people, $1 million a year. Here's another concept to think about. Do we really need to have Juno operate every year? How about if they meet every other year? With the legislators alone, we spend over $4 million a year for the 90 days down there. That's including their pay and per diem. Is it really that important for them to be there twice or every year and then go into special sessions? Common sense will tell you, there's no law out there that it's so important that we have to have it hammered out every single year. Let's save money.
So reducing the budget, it's really easy to go, oh, we have to look at the big pieces, and the big pieces do it really quickly. But when the big pieces are the foundation of the income source that you have, you need to protect some of that. Now, oil and gas credits, from what I have looked at, reading the information and the bills that are out there, oil and gas tax credits, as I said earlier, they have no top end on an annual basis. They have no attachment to revenues. So we're paying oil tax credits for exploration that exceed what we receive in revenues. And that's inappropriate. We need to look at that perspective and bring oil tax credits in line with what the potential revenues are or what the actual revenues are on an annual basis. I agree that we need to look at that. But I also believe there are other areas. Across-the-board cuts are not feasible because you have areas, I mean, and I can't, I've not delved into the details of this state budget, but I know working with the local budget, there were specific things. It's like you go through and you say, we have this program. Is this program meeting the intended need of the program? If it's not meeting the intended need of the program, or it's costing more than the benefit that you receive from the program, should you continue using that program? I think those programs need to be identified, and we need to reduce and eliminate those. We need to look at things from a perspective of what do we need first, because we need to continue having our infrastructure maintained, we need to continue providing education, and we need to continue operating the basic business of the state of Alaska. But if you don't have money in your personal wallet, you quit doing things like going out to dinner and you quit your extras. So we need to look at our extras and say, can we still afford to do those? Can we still afford all of the things we're doing? And where we can't, we need to cut them back. But we do need to talk about oil and gas with the oil and gas industry and reform that.
Thank you. Ms. Wyeth, let me follow up. Can you identify any specific cuts that you would make?
Specifically, I would look at the reform of the oil and tax credits from the perspective of not eliminating them, but helping them be as beneficial to the state of Alaska as they can be financially.
Okay, thank you. Here's a yes-no question. To raise state funds, would you support a state income tax?
Yes.
Very good. Scott?
Well, that's a business. See, I'm going to... No.
Very good.
No.
Okay. How about a city sales tax? Let's see. Which of you would be supporting the state sales tax when Homer Hudson? I guess you already answered that. Sales tax?
No. No, we didn't.
Right. Would you? Okay, fair enough. Would you? How about a state sales tax?
No.
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 Okay, fair enough. Thank you for being to the point, folks. Let's see the. Can you talk to, would you please explain if and how the state budget reductions would shift costs to cities? And would that, they may result in increased local taxes on borough residents?
On borough residents? Is
that borough residents or both borough and city taxes, how that may increase.
Right. Interestingly enough, and people don't always attend to these things, but the transfer of state fiscal issues to the local government has been happening for years. It's not just now with the tighter budget. Years ago, they transferred, harbors were a state project. They transferred harbors to the local communities. And so now the cities have the harbors. They transferred a lot of road powers or a lot of road responsibilities. As quickly as they can upgrade roads, they transfer them to local responsibility. That increases local costs and local income tax or local sales tax revenues requirements. And they also have transferred a lot of expense, community jails. We run a community jail that provides services to the state of Alaska, and they have shifted those to communities across the state. Probably 3 years ago when they first started making changes in those funding efforts, there were three or four small rural communities. They just closed their jail. They said, we can no longer afford to provide jail services because the state had cut their funding. And so the result of the state reducing contributions to those critical services in communities is that the service either dies or becomes less. City of Homer has been really fortunate that the community and the users of the facilities have been funding that. But the state has been transferring expense to local communities and the borough for a long time. And the federal government's doing the same thing to the state. So it is an ongoing issue, and it does increase the cost of doing business in the community.
One of the first ones that we have seen and is going to probably get much worse is bond debt reimbursement for schools. It was cut 25% this year, and that comes to the borough. And that was at 70% of school bond debts that the state would annually appropriate to pay off. 2 years ago, we said, hey, no more. We're not going to do this for 5 years. So pass bonds and you won't get any reimbursement on those bonds. But now we are cutting back on the previous bonds. They're all subject to appropriation. If we do not pass other revenue sources, we will probably see that go to zero. And all of that will come to you as property tax. Revenue sharing would probably have to go away. Remember, at this time, we're only getting 30% of the budget as revenue. The rest is taking out of savings. Our savings, if we do this year, one more year, the constitutional budget reserve, our main funding savings account, will be gone. So I think that what will happen is, trying to break that in half, we would be looking at about a 30% across the board budget cut if the legislature that is sent back is not willing to do any taxes. PERS and TERS, right now, the local governments only pay 22%. I'm sure that percentage will be shifted to the local governments, as well as getting rid of troopers means that if you want police powers, then the local governments are going to have to increase their policing, because the troopers wouldn't be for that, as well as road maintenance as well. So if the decision is made not to increase revenues or diversify our revenues, then we're looking at a lot of shifting because there's nowhere else to get the money.
Winston Churchill once said, taxing a people into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket trying to lift himself up by the handle. It doesn't work. Okay? When you take more money away from the people, it doesn't work. Listen, I need a new truck, but I can't afford one right now, so I have to tighten my belt. That's what's going to have to happen here in the state of Alaska. We're going to have to tighten our belt. Right now, for example, they want to take away the seniors' tax exemption on their property to raise revenue. All that's going to do is hurt the seniors. Now, the seniors here in the state put 3 to 4% more money into the local economy. What's going to happen to the seniors? You're going to wind up pushing them out. We have to protect them. So that means sacrificing other things. Yeah, I'd love to have the road plowed, you know, twice a week when it snows. But if you don't have the money for it, you just cannot afford to do it. You have to suck it up. That's what life is all about. You know, it's nice to have things given to you and taken care of. But this is Alaska. We're a tough breed of people, and we're going to have to live with it.
Okay, let me follow up with a question that will change things up. It's just going to be a one-minute response to this one. Follow up a little bit. Are seniors a drain or a benefit for the economy of Alaska? Which would you support? 1 minute, please. Tell us. Are seniors a drain or a benefit for the economy of Alaska? Which would you support?
Well, seniors are a benefit to the economy, of course. All the people that are living here are a benefit, but we have to change that from the economy to state revenue or state government. Every single person in the state of Alaska is a drain on state treasury. There is no money from a job. There's no state property tax. There's no state sales tax. There's no state income tax. We are the only state in the nation that does not have the people paying anything for the services they get. You know, you can call it freeloading, you can call it freedom, you can call it whatever you want, but if you want any services and you pay nothing for them, it's really tough to say, suck it up and do something, because there's nothing to pay for that. So we have a big problem coming, and seniors aren't the cause of it, but we all have to figure out whether we are going to be contributors to society or drains on the state treasury. Economically, we're all pluses.
I love seniors. Seniors are a cornucopia of knowledge and wisdom. And they built this town, they built this state, and I think we owe it to them to take care of them as much as we can.
That's me.
There you go. What?
Don't get there, Paul.
I think he is there. I think that senior citizens, I know senior citizens are a huge contribution to society in general, to our communities in specific. The senior exemption issue is not about the value of the seniors. They are extremely valuable. When I look at the senior exemption issue, I look at the number of people coming up on the senior scale in the state of Alaska compared to the people that are still in the workforce. And we are reaching a desperate tipping point with that right now. When you have a society where the young adults can't afford to live, they certainly can't afford to subsidize older people either. And so it becomes an issue. And it's not that they're a drain. It's just you come to a tipping point where every individual has to be contributing at some level in order to continue doing anything. And so I think that's where we are.
Thank you. Let's go to the 30-second answer for this one, because it's pretty to the point. Would you cap the permanent fund dividend? If so, at what monetary level?
I would not change the formula for the permanent fund dividend, so no.
Okay.
I propose that distribution go to 25% of the five-year average, and so that would be about $1,000, and the rest would go toward providing the services that the people of Alaska need and financing your budget.
I would not cap it. The money was based for our mineral rights from Hammond when we discovered oil here in the 70s. The governor taking your PFD, he's doing it illegally. He has no authority to do that. So that's why you see the recall on the governor going around. I know I've talked to a lot of people, and a lot of people need that money. They use that money during the winter months. They use that money to pay for their oil, their heating oil. I told you I didn't like that sign.
We're keeping you honest here. I'll do one more 30-second question before we get back to the more difficult, broader income issues. You guys are, you're cooperating so great with that.
I'm just trying to figure it out.
You guys, I wish you all been working that well. Would you favor coal exploration in Cook Inlet?
Coal exploration
in Cook Inlet.
Exploration.
Right. Extraction. Okay, thank you. Extraction.
Oh.
What?
Give me 30 seconds.
I think the biggest example is the Chewitna coal field across Cook Inlet, which would mine through 11 miles of salmon stream down to 350 foot of depth, and I don't think that can ever be replaced. So it's trade-offs, and so that, and then. And then under Homer, we had that with the coal bed methane. So I think that development of those coal resources is not advantageous to the people here on this peninsula.
Although that it would create a lot of jobs, I have not looked at all the data for this. So to give you an opinion on it, I'd be lying to you. So I need to see the pros and cons. Yes, I'm going to protect the salmon and the waterfront and everything. But like I said, I don't have the information on me to give you an educated decision on it.
And I'm with John. I know, like, a thimble in an ocean full of the Chewitna mine issue. But coal exploration, there are advantages, as we discussed earlier, with regards to energy, to mining coal, and there are economic advantages to that, but we would have to make sure, as with all types of mining, you're doing it in a manner that does not destroy the environment that it lives in.
Okay, thank you.